Welcome back, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot, oh my, it's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others. Here are your Supernatural hosts, Patricia Baker and Becky Andreasen. Supernatural Girls.
And here we are again, and there is no echo. I am so happy. So let me bring Becky back on the line. Hello, Becky.
Okay. You know, I didn't hear any echo from any of you.
Well, that's a good thing, but unfortunately our poor audience was subjected to hearing the echo. So anyways, I'm hoping this will stay good, and now we're going to bring Gerard back on, and let's hope he has no echo. Hi, Gerard.
Oh. Hello again,
back.
Ladies. How do I sound?
Yes.
Yay.
Sounds good. Yay.
Sorry about that.
I asked them to please move away or move back further. I did quickly ask when we get off.
Well, good. Thank you, Becky. I guess they heard you because now we can hear everything clearly and no echo.
Yes.
So, my goodness, this is a fascinating discussion, and I'm glad we don't have that echo anymore. So good work, everybody.
Oh, gee.
The challenges, my goodness, of Blog Talk.
Oh.
That's a lot, but we do what we can to make it an easy listening experience for everybody.
Mm.
So.
When we start talking any other time with guests and UFOs, we are going to have to, right up front, ask them to move back so that we won't have to keep on going through this.
I know it.
Yes.
See? I'm
every time
you.
UFO
those
talk, I'm telling you.
Those mischievous little beings.
They are.
Hey, if they
want
to listen to our show, they can do what everybody else does. Listen to the show
through
the internet.
That's right.
Download it later.
Press that button in the ship and just listen that way.
That's right. Quit opening our lines so wide we get echoes. Okay. Well, anyways. But, you've got, Gerard, you've got some really fascinating stories in your book, Mid-Atlantic UFOs, which everybody can buy on Amazon.com. And it's just filled with story after story, account after account. But there was one that really caught Becky and my attention, and that is the one about the green mist, the blue-green mist. Can you tell our audience about that?
Well, I'll preface this by saying that after I interviewed the person about this story, I thought, I'd never heard of blue-green mist before, so let me, look it up on the Internet. There's probably a lot of stories that other people might have had. There was not. I couldn't find anything on it. Now, I'm not the greatest computer or Internet surfer or computer savvy person. I told you earlier, I'm not a techie. I'm low, low tech. But even so, usually information comes to me after, putting in a little time. I couldn't find anything about it. And I had just been in contact with Jacques Vallée out in San Francisco prior to interviewing the person about this story. So I thought, well, here's a guy who's been around for about 800 years in the UFO business. Let me shoot him an email, lay out the story real quick, and I'll bet Jacques Vallée is going to be able to, put some light on it. No, he could not. He had never heard of it either. In fact, he wanted to open up an investigation on it, and we did a through the person I got the story from, who was still friends with the family that the boy that was covered with the mist, his family. They did not. He contacted them to see if Jacques Vallée could talk to them, talk to the boy's doctor, talk to the even the veterinarians and all that were involved, and everyone said no. No, we don't want to open up that can of worms again. You know,
well,
they grieved enough, you know. It was a sad story, yeah, and I have to say that for most of the stories, if you read the books, you'll find they have a very uplifting ending generally, or at least a safe ending. In this case, it was not. It didn't turn out well. Generally, now to go into the story for your audience. Back in the early 90s, these six friends from Maryland graduated from high school, and they decided to go backpacking in the northern Maryland area, up near Cumberland Gap and that area, as a way of celebrating their graduation from high school. That was going to be their senior week. A lot of people, where I grew up in Pennsylvania and Jersey, you know, you'd go down the shore or down to the beach and hang out. These guys were going to go backpacking up in the hills. So the first night, they got out there, and five of the boys had sleeping bags, conventional sleeping bags made of, you know, nylon and polyester and all that. But the one fellow, I'm just going to call him Joe, slept under a wool blanket. And how significant that is or not, I don't know. But as the story, you know, progressed, you know, maybe it was. I don't know. Now, the boys had said that they the fellow telling me the story said that they had a couple of beers earlier in the night, as recent high school grads would certainly do. But
right.
By 8 o'clock, 8:30, they were all done with their drinks, and they talked and chatted and went to sleep. And around 2 o'clock in the morning, plenty of time to sober up or be done with your drink, one of the kids got up and woke the fellow telling me the story, and I'm going to call him Mike. I hope I can remember these names as we go along.
Yeah.
So he woke his friend Mike up and said, "Hey, Mike, get up, look at Joe. There's something wrong." And he said he got up, all five of them got up, and their friend Joe, who was laying on the other side of the fire, they had had a fire earlier, the five of them were laying downwind of the fire. Joe was laying upwind with his wool blanket. Well, also on top of Joe was a nice, neat rectangle of blue-green mist, approximately 8 inches thick, a little bit rough around the edges. It had rounded corners, and it was completely flat. It was as if somebody had laid a blue-green slab over him, but it was mist, and it was semi-transparent, so they could still see their friend underneath it. Well, they called to him, and they said, "You know, Joe, wake up. What's the matter with you? What's that stuff on you? What's going on?" And Joe made no movements whatsoever, never recognized that they were calling him or could hear them at all. And they, after a few moments, became panicky, and they decided to just grab Joe and pull him out from under this mist. But as they got closer and closer to the mist, the closer they got, the more numb they began to feel. Their feet and legs were beginning to go numb. Their hands, if they tried to reach towards him, started to lose feeling. And they got scared. And who wouldn't? And they backed away. And it seemed like no sooner did they back away than the mist vanished in an instant. It was gone. Then they went to their friend and woke him up, and he got up. He was very attentive. He was a little put off by them waking him. He didn't seem to have any recollection whatsoever of this mist being around him. He knew nothing about it. And he actually thought, well, maybe they were pulling a joke on him or something, you know. And he said, "You know, look, I've been fine. Leave me alone. Let's just go back to sleep," you know. And everything seemed to be fine for the time being. However, the next morning when they got up, Joe insisted that they go home. He wanted to end their week-long adventure right now. And they were saying, well, his friends were saying, Mike and his friend, the other kids were saying, well, are you sure? I mean, we're out here. We're, you know, we're going to party. You know, everyone's going off to college in September. You know, this is our big chance, blah, blah, blah. No. Joe wanted to go home. And all these boys lived in small town, Maryland, somewhere in small town area in northern Maryland. Well, the other kids went with him. They figured, well, something was bothering Joe, and they thought, all right, okay, we'll take you home. So they took him home, and from that day on, Joe, who up to that point had been a really good friend, a bubbly individual, you know, youthful, excited, energetic, like any 18, 19-year-old would be, just graduated from high school, wahoo, right?
Right.
Wow.
Well, Joe changed. Joe started getting sick. He started going to doctors, physical and mental. His health was falling as if someone pushed it off a cliff. He stopped communicating with his friends. He wouldn't go out with them anymore. When they called, he wouldn't take their calls or he wouldn't return their calls. Became essentially a recluse. Now, Mike, the guy who told me the story, was best friends with Joe, and he was really hurt by this. He really, you know, he missed his friend. This is his friend through high school, and maybe before, I don't remember that, but certainly through high school. And he tried to get in touch with him, couldn't. He did keep in touch with his mom, though, with Joe's mom, and he would ask her once in a while, well, how's Joe doing, you know, and she would say, oh, he's sick with this, he's got that, this is bothering him, something else. His mental state was deteriorating. Everything was just falling apart in no time at all. Finally, after about 5 or 6 months, I think it was, Mike called and actually got Joe on the phone. And he was happy to talk to his friend, but he was a little irritated, too. And he said, you know, why don't you call me back? Why don't you take my calls? How are you doing? What's going on with you? What happened to you, you know? And Joe said to him, you know, that night when that mist was over me, he said, I just feel like that thing sucked the very soul right out of me.
Mm. Wow.
And with that, he hung up. And Mike never heard from his friend again, because in about 2 or 3 months after that, Joe committed suicide.
What an awful thing.
Now, if that was
thing.
The end of the story, that would be bizarre enough if you asked me.
Right.
That wasn't at the end of it, though, because about, I'm going to guess it was about 15 years later, Mike now has, gone to Texas A&M. He's now has a business up in near Elkton, Maryland. He's married. He and his wife have a little farm, and they both work on the farm and off the farm. So they're very busy people. They have some heads of cattle. And one night in springtime, some of their cows were pregnant and were giving birth now here and there to new calves. And this one particular night, they were bringing all the cows in to the barn, and this one cow who was pregnant was missing. So Mike decides, well, I'm going to go, you know, find the cow and shoo her back into the barn here. So he hops in his SUV and starts across. They had 300 acres up there in near Elkton. And he heads out on his SUV, and he gets a little distance out into the field, and suddenly his car just conks right out, right in mid gas pedal. It just stops running. So it coasts to a halt. He puts on the brakes as best he can, because power brakes don't work if the engine's not running that well. He gets it in gear, pops the hood, and everything looks perfectly fine. He has no idea what's wrong, but he really can't worry about it. He wants to find the cow. So he shuts down the hood, leaves the car, and starts walking. Doesn't have to go too far. He ends up in a clearing on his property there, and here's the cow laying down, giving birth to a calf with blue-green mist covering over the two of them. Same shape, same color, same everything as the one from some 15 years ago, more or less, that his friend Joe experienced. So now he sees this, and he stops in his tracks. He's almost frozen, and he's thinking, now what do I do? So he didn't know, should he throw something at it? Should he grab a stick and try to hit the mist, or you fan it away? What do? You don't know what to do. All he knows is he has to do something, so he starts marching towards this thing with the hope that it'd have an idea by the time he got to it. Well, the cow had given birth. The calf was out, and just as Mike was approaching, snap, the mist is gone. Absolutely vanished, like if you turned off a switch. So he's thinking, oh, okay, well, at least I don't have to deal with that this time. That's gone, whatever the heck it is. Let me get the cow up, try to get the calf moving, get everybody back in the barn, and go back and see about my car. Let's see where we go with that. And he was actually a little bit more. I'm making light of this for my. He was a lot more concerned about the blue-green mist that I'm telling at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing to be done about it. It's gone. It was there. He saw it. It's gone a second time. All right, let me get my animals and get out of here. So that's what he did. But within about 2 months, the cow died. Within another month, the calf died. The veterinary report said that it was heart attack of these two animals. Both had heart attacks. But what Mike said was, he said that was the official report, but in talking with the vet, he said the vet had no clue why the animals died.
Mm.
So
that is so concerning. And, I mean, again, this is what really caught our attention. But, Becky, you went and did some research, and you found a very interesting similar story, and I'm not sure, Gerard, if you've ever heard this before, but Becky found the story of a man, actually a writer, Lawrence Durrell, who told the story of a mist that enveloped a hiker on the island of Corfu, confusing and frightening him. And then the hiker said he heard voices emanating from the mist, and months later he inexplicably jumped from his Athens apartment. And his phone was found torn from the wall. So apparently there are other cases where this blue-green mist has had this kind of a deleterious effect on people.
What, was it a blue-green mist that that person encountered?
Yes.
It says,
oh,
yes,
my.
I believe it's the same.
Okay.
The same monitor.
I'm sorry, right.
I was thinking it was more, it was my feeling that it was more not E.T., but more like jinn, you know, like spiritual, like it was a spirit being, like a jinn, a very old and ancient. But, I mean, even if you research in jinn, those colors are associated to them, too, black, blue, and green, the colors. So to me it sounded awfully close to it being jinn.
Well, I don't know what it was. That's why it's unidentified, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's I did hear or start to hear of a I was on another show a few months ago back in the summer, and I was telling this story, and somebody called in who was doing a UFO research up in the Erie, Pennsylvania area. And they had encountered something about a blue-green ball of mist in a interview that they were doing, but they never filled in the story on the radio station's website, and I was not able to contact anybody about it, so I never got to follow up on that story. But so now this is the third time that I've heard something about it, and I guess you don't know on that story what the fellow was wearing or anything about the clothing here. And I bring that up because I mentioned, remember, the wool blanket. And the fellow laying prone, you know. So it happened while he was wearing a natural blanket, an animal covering, wool, and he was prone. And then the cows had been, you know, were natural and laying prone. And I'm wondering, well, there are two things that are similar, but is it really a connection? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I'd be curious to know more about what happened to that later.
A very important point here, and also because I concur with Becky, it does feel like some type of nefarious jinn energy, but it also feels very much like a nature spirit connection here. And again, you're bringing up the natural, the wool covering, the fact that it was the cow laying prone on the ground. But certainly, I guess, if I saw this, knowing what I know now, I'd run for my life in the opposite direction of anything like that.
Right.
Anything that can suck the soul out of you, my goodness, I mean, ugh.
Does not sound good.
No, it's very scary stuff.
You know?
Much scarier to me than the extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
I know, and being
very strange story.
Blue-green, I mean, you don't think anything bad's going to come from blue-green. It's usually red that people are frightened of.
Right, or black, maybe, or something like
black.
That, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah, because as someone in our chat room just said, this, you know, blue and green are associated with healing colors.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Something that crossed my mind And I don't know. I don't know if this would apply or not for certain. But you know, different people will react differently to different things, right? So perhaps, and now certainly as a teenager, 18, 19 year old, you know, nobody knows who themselves when they're 18, 19 year old. You know, maybe the rare person might, like the Dalai Lama, maybe he knew himself pretty well when he was 18 or 19. Yeah. Other than that, you know, other than him, you know, and please, listeners, if your child is 18 or 19 and you think they're a genius, please don't email me and say, Jerry, you're wrong. My child knows just, I don't want to hear it, really. You know, and if they are, that's great. But most people aren't. And I wonder how much something like this kind of experience would affect somebody who doesn't know who they are, who is insecure about themselves, versus somebody who is grounded, somebody really, like the Dalai Lama, for instance. If it happened that he ran into some blue-green mist, would it upset him or would he feel he had lost something important in himself after this experience? You know, we're not going to know the answer to this. It's just something that crossed my mind during the writing of that story. You know, and I wonder how much that affects the outcome in the end.
But it was physical also. I mean, it wasn't just mental. It was also physical.
Oh, it's definitely physical. Yeah, that's
damage.
True. Definitely
and
physical.
You're right. And you know, the green and blue are healing colors, and they're good. But remember balance. There's always the yin and the yang. So the good, the bad, you know. So that could have been the bad side of those colors, you know, used in a spiritual form for some reason or other. And to me, it seems like they've taken the actual essence or the energy essence out of the living being, which was him, and then also the cattle, you know.
And also the fellow in Greece. So,
right. Yes, and him
yeah,
in Greece.
You know, the real answer to this is I think, far outside our reach. But something odd about it, something very strange, and maybe even a little sinister. Maybe even a little
Absolutely.
Sinister.
That's the right word for it, sinister. You know, it feels like a vampire. I mean, that's without the human appearance.
You know, that's a funny thing. Yeah, I had never thought about that. But that, you know what? You're right. It does sound like that. Isn't that funny?
It does, because if it's sucking the life out of someone, you know, and their body begins to degrade and their mental capacities degrade, I mean, certainly that does feel like what's happening here.
Yeah. You know, that didn't occur to me at all until just now. That was a really good point to bring up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe this is the beginning years and maybe ancient times ago of the vampire legends. This could be.
Yes,
I mean,
it very well could be.
Anything's possible on this planet, if you ask me.
Yeah.
It's not too much that I don't.
That's for sure.
Oh,
well, Gerard, we're going to take this opportunity to have a short break. We're going to come right back. We have lots more questions for you, and we have people in the chat room that have questions. And if anybody would like to call in with a question for our guest, then just call us at 646-478-0828. That is 646-478-0828. Everybody, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic One Company. As one of the pioneers of the Organic One movement, since 1980, I have brought you the very best and most authentic organic wines directly to your table. I work with small family estates who grow certified organic grapes and produce exceptional wines. You can purchase our wines individually from our website at theorganicwinecompany.com or join one of our wine clubs. Our organic wines are perfect for you and for your family as gifts for friends and relatives, and they are simply spectacular for the holidays. Visit us at theorganicwinecompany.com to enjoy the very best organic wines conveniently delivered to your door. I am Veronique Raskin, passionate about my mission. I offer to you vegan, organic, and biodynamic wines Wines made by people of the heart, wines with a heart. Au revoir. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Are you ready for a new experience of freedom and powerful connection? Would you like a positive, effortless change in your life? Then come to CosmicFusion.com, where we offer the most advanced energy clearing and expansion techniques in the world, with a quantum vortex energy to activate your divine blueprint and life's purpose. When your soul leads the way with cosmic fusion and quantum vortex energy, you can break clear of past difficulties and blocks with the power of the source. With cosmic fusion, the source energy does the work for you. It's easy and effortless. Listen to our free meditation right from our Cosmic Fusion website, the Cosmic Code Meditation. Sign up for one of our interactive webinars today. Come to Cosmic Fusion, www.kosmicfusion.com, to experience an effortless awakening and transformation. Are you ready for an upgrade? Are you ready for a new experience of living in the fifth dimensional magic and powerful connection? Then visit CosmicFusion.com today. CosmicFusion.com.
Your property tax bill. Have you seen it lately? It's frightening. Your property taxes are going up while your home value is going down. Time to fight back and win. For the real truth about the property tax system, get attorney Pat Quintilian's book, Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Attorney Quintilian answers all your questions and gives you the facts you need to fight a property tax bill that is spiraling out of control. You'll also read about what happens to property owners who don't check their property records, only to find out too late they're taxed on square footage, fixtures, and even buildings that they don't own. Is this happening to you? Learn your rights. Buy attorney Pat Quintilian's book today. Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Available on Amazon.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We are speaking with an exciting guest, Gerard Medvak, who is the author of Mid-Atlantic UFOs, High Traffic Area. Welcome back, everybody, and welcome again, Gerard.
Thank you.
Here we are again talking about these amazing amounts of sightings over the Mid-Atlantic region of the United States. You said it was averaging out to 5 a day?
Oh, and that is so conservative, so conservative. In the book it says that I only used, to get those figures, I only used two reporting sources. I used MUFON and the National UFO Reporting Center. So I took the same one-year period, and I think I went something like April to March. I didn't want to do January to December. I wanted to break it up. And in both, from both organizations, and there are a good three or four or more other organizations that I didn't even bother to consult. So just based on those two, it comes up to 5 a day. Doesn't count the other sources, and it doesn't count people who don't report. So what I think if I said 10 a day, I think I'd still be ridiculously low, ridiculously low. For myself, I mean, it seems to me most people do not report their experiences to any of the regular services that where they could, like the International UFO Museum or George Filer's website. You know, you could go to any of these places and report. But I've had 34 experiences over 55 years. I've never reported one of them anywhere officially.
Well, there you
know?
Go. Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel a need to do that. Yeah, and of the three books now, I've had three books coming out with UFOs. Two are out. One's coming out next year. I've probably interviewed 150 people. I think one of them reported it previously.
Oh, my goodness. That
one?
Is it.
You know, I mean, these are the kind of stories that I like to to interview for and to talk to people about, ones that have never been reported anywhere before. So we could, I can help maybe with a little cathartic relief for the experiencer to get their story out finally. And it just makes a great story anyway. You know, I mean, they're just great stories. So,
right. And how can anyone say any more? No more are not real. You know?
It's just a preponderance of information about it and testimony about it. You know, if you go into a court of law and put your hand on a little black book and say you're going to tell the truth, people will generally believe you. Not always, but generally, you know. When I do seminars now in my little local area, I do little seminars on UFOs. I started off with taking an oath because people just still have it in their head that, oh, you're making it up. Oh, you're doing it for the money. <You know? laughs> Which cracks me up. I had a guy say that to my face one time.
Yeah.
I was selling the books down at my local town park here one day last summer, and there was nobody at this point in the day. There was not a soul standing anywhere near my little table, right? But these two old guys come up and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm selling my books on ghosts and UFOs." And then one guy says, "Ah, that's a lot of baloney. You're just doing that for the money." And I said, "Money?" He said, "You see anybody standing around here buying these books
really?
like hotcakes? No, it's not that." So anyway, that was kind of funny. But you know, why they don't believe it is just knocks me out. I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people, it just feels that it threatens their concept of reality, and they just don't have a place for it. And it is difficult, I think, for many people who have had these experiences, whether they've been abducted or whether they've had multiple sightings. It's hard to integrate this. I mean, what do you do with it? It's easy to just wait for the next experience, but at the end of the day, it can be a very big so what, because there's no place to bring it into your life and enrich your life with it. I think Becky is one of the very few examples who has been able to enrich her life with these experiences. But most people just have this anomalous experience, and it becomes a so what, because, again,
yeah,
what do you do with it?
True.
At the end of the day.
Right, and how does it help or hurt you? As far as you know, it has zero effect on you.
Right.
You know, unless you've been somebody who's abducted.
No. Yeah, if you experience it, I mean, it can't be zero effect, because case in point, Patricia's husband, I mean, absolute non-believer.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is so exciting. You know,
oh my God, Becky! You know, I've been waiting for that moment for so long.
Yes.
Well, see, that is somebody who's letting it in. They're letting it in.
Oh, not by choice.
No, they knocked and came in.
You don't know my husband.
They came right in. Love it.
But I mean, he's letting it into his heart. You know.
I think these things have been very exciting
for me.
This was a forced thing. I mean, when you look up the word skeptic in the dictionary, you'll see his picture. He is beyond skeptic. And when this happened, it was really a reality shattering moment for him. And believe me, he was trying to think up a logical explanation that fit his concept of reality for weeks. And he still thinks about one, but he can't find one. So, and I think for a lot of people that's, you know, we see only what we've been trained to see, but then once in a while something sneaks in like this. And
what did he see exactly, may I ask?
Yes, he saw a large ship, and it was just dangling there in the sky. It took a sharp right turn, then a sharp left turn, then it turned horizontal and traveled at an incredible speed quite far away. And that's when I came out, and I was able to catch a little bit of it on my video camera. I did see it at that point, so
I was able to
capture it. But
I love it when you say stuff like that, you know, when people say stuff like that. It's just fantastic.
It changes their life. It changes their concept of things, and even the fact of what is possible and what isn't possible. Well, geez, I thought this was never going to be possible, and look, there it is, you know, there it is.
Absolutely.
And I'm seeing it, you know.
Well, that's certainly the way I've grown up with it. Mm-hmm. I love every minute of it. But I have to tell you, a number of times I've been with people who have seen the same thing I've seen and said they've seen nothing. Now that's
that's
disconcerting. Well, you know, for one thing, I think if you're even a little bit into power and control, you don't want to see these things. You're not going to want to see
I agree with you.
You're going to realize instantly, even if it's subconsciously, that you have no power or control over this. You got nothing, you know. And that's a guess. I'm just guessing on that, but that's one thing. But I've been with a couple of people. One fellow who said while we were watching the thing, I asked him. I said, "You see what I see?" He goes, "Yeah, yeah." Well, let's go chase it. It shot down at the earth and all. I said, "Let's see if we can go find where it went." And then, okay, we went after it and all this. But within 2 weeks, he was saying, "No, we didn't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see anything."
Yeah.
So now that person did not let it into his heart. You know, he knows it's there. I mean, he knows it's there, but he will not admit to it. So that's kind of a sad story. And he's not the only one. There's been several people.
Well, there's lots of people like that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
fear.
I
could
so.
Be fear.
Oh, certainly would be part of it. You know, I mean, it can be a game changer for you. You know, it changes the rest of the question. If you let it in and you admit that you saw it and all that stuff, I think it changes the questions you'll ask for the rest of your life.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the things about your book that really made an important statement for me is just how many sightings there are. And again, we can talk about it in the numbers again. It averaged out conservatively at 5 a day. But when you sit down to read your book, which again for everybody is called Mid-Atlantic UFOs High Traffic Area, it is really startling how many people actually did report their sightings. It's like, I mean, just an amazing amount of people.
Yeah.
of people. And this is just one area of the country. So it begs the question, is this going on elsewhere to this degree? Do you think it is?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's pretty uniform around the planet, at least in populated areas, you know, and possibly in unpopulated areas where of course, nobody can see them. The little reports that are in the book, each state has a little section of short reports. Now, I got those reports. There are collections that were put together by the UFO Museum out in Roswell, and they come from a couple of different sources, and I cite them in there, Norfolk and George Filer's sites. Well, when I called them and told them I was putting this book together, and I said, you know, can you send me some reports that you have, just short reports, so I can just rewrite them and, you know, make them clear and use them in my book and have your permission and blah, blah, blah. And they said, sure. I said, well, can you send me out a few? And they said, yeah, sure, we'll be there in a week or so. They sent me a package that must have weighed 15 pounds full of reports. I had so many reports. I mean, it took me, like, days just to go through them to try to decide, you know, which ones do I want to use, because I wanted to keep that part of the book fairly simple and short. I don't want to focus on that, because that's just breaking up the monotony of the longer stories. But to get through them all, I was looking at them and reading them and thinking, look at all this. Look at all this. These are the reported ones from this area, and I am certain that the number of sightings far, far outweigh the numbers that have been reported. Far, far outweigh it.
I think you're right. I mean, what's the benefit to reporting this anyway? None.
Well, no, you're right. I don't know. You know, maybe it's a cathartic. You know, maybe you'll feel better because you put it in a report somewhere that where you feel people will be empathetic. Let's face it, a lot of folks, and certainly a number of folks that I've talked to about their stories for the books, have said that, you know, I'm really glad to tell you my story because I've been waiting to tell this story for such and such a number of years, because when it first happened and I told, you know, my brother or my best friend or something, they said I was nuts, they said it was Venus, they said it was swamp gas, they said, it, you know, and they didn't want to hear about it anymore, so I couldn't tell anybody. You know, that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Particularly
well, it is.
If it's somebody who's been abducted. That can be really, really scary.
That's rough.
For some people.
Yeah.
It can be really scary. So mm-hmm. I was happy to listen to their stories and talk to them about it and not judge, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. What? You're giving them an ear, a sympathetic ear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think the government doesn't do anything?
You know,
why?
I honestly don't know. They have. I really believe at this point they have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
They have nothing to lose. What are they going to lose? I don't.
Right.
I don't get it. I just don't get it. And in my other book, the UFOs Above Pennsylvania, there's a story in there all about the government and some of their monkey shines. And you know, they know about it as sure as you and I, or the three of us, are all talking here and everybody's listening. They know about it. If I know about it, everybody must know about it, you know?
Yeah, and bases, things, there's sightings around bases all the time.
Oh, yeah. In fact, in that book, in the Mid-Atlantic book, under Delaware, there's a story mm-hmm. about the ground observation corps that was running during the 1950s. And the lady that told me the story about her and her brother when they were kids, they joined this observation corps, and they had to fill out reports if they saw anything. Well, sure enough, their first night up or day up there, they saw something, and they had to report it. And they were trained to call it in to a distribution center, and then mm-hmm. they would decide if they'd contact the Air Force or not. Well, As this story went on, and they were fooling around there for their little volunteer shift, the kids started looking back in the logbook, and they put their UFO sighting in there. But they started looking back, and like every other day, there was some kind of UFO sighting, some unexplainable
right.
object. And the Air Force at the time was talking about letting the logbooks out to the public, so that they could see that there were UFO reports and all. Well, if the Air Force was talking about doing that then, in the 1950s, is that not confirmation that there were UFOs?
Right.
One would
say. Why aren't they doing it now? We
yeah,
want them
no,
to
they're
do
not doing it now.
Now.
But that
yeah.
whole story just, and I think I made a note about that at the end of that little story or so, that, you know, and by the way, the point I guess I should make for your audience is that the Air Force made these comments and suggestions that they might do this in a newspaper article. I reprinted the newspaper article with permission in the book from, I forget the date on it, July 8th, 1954 or something like that, that the Air Force was saying, oh, yeah, we're thinking about letting this book out, this logbook out to the public so they could see about the UFO sightings. What? What? Isn't that confirmation?
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
Once again, they must have changed their story somewhere and said, "Oh no, it's not a crashed UFO. It's a weather balloon." You know, like, come on, stop already.
Well, and you have to wonder too. Do they know all of what they're dealing with? I don't think they do. I think they know some aspects of it, and certainly it's all about keeping power and control in their hands. So, I mean, if you look at the way things are going today, how much representation do we really have in our government anymore? Very little, it appears. So,
that's a sad topic. Yeah,
it is
a
very
sad
topic. But then you see how the UFO phenomenon can fit in so well to that. And one of the things that I personally am offended by is their disinformation campaign. So that people, that have had these abduction experiences and are trying to get some sense of peace about it and some understanding about it are really misled by our own government, and information is put out there that's not true, and then when it's debunked, then it makes everybody look silly, and it's so unnecessary, and it causes further humiliation for people who are just trying to get to the truth.
You know, I don't know that anybody could have ever or will ever say it better than that. That's about as good as I've ever heard it said. So congratulations. Add one more piece to that. They're doing all that disinformation with our money. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
To make you just want to throw yourself in front of a bus. I mean, it's just awful.
Absolutely. Or a UFO, you'll get hit a lot harder.
Yeah, that's right.
You'll die a lot faster if you jump in front of the UFO. It'll wipe you out in a half a second.
They probably have more concern for our well-being than our own government, unfortunately. I have to say that because you even referenced it when you were talking about Travis Walton, and who's going to be our guest next week, and how Travis felt at one point he had gotten too close to something, and they actually moved him away to protect him. So
right.
That was an interesting little vignette about his experience.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's a great speaker. I rarely have ever heard anybody give a lecture with such warmth and sincerity. So
what a wonderful
compliment. You'll have fun talking to him. I only met him briefly at a MUFON conference last year in the September of 2012, and he's a cool guy, really cool guy. So good for you. You're having him on the show.
Well, thanks to Becky's powers of persuasion.
Yeah, just give me a number. I'll call anybody. Say, please, please, we need you, we want you. Especially for them
to
tell. Yes. I want their stories told. I want the world to know.
That's right.
Yes.
And he really got it from all sides, too. He got it from, you know, everybody was kind of nasty when it came to his experience.
Yeah.
So, and again,
you know what? Since you mentioned that, will you girls do me a favor and ask him a question next week?
Of course.
Ask him which was worse, the alien experience or the human experience afterwards. I forgot
good
to
question.
Ask him that when I met him, I kicked myself in the rear end ever since. So, hooray! Maybe you guys can ask him that question. I'm going to tune in and see if he'll answer it.
Absolutely,
we'll
it's a great question.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, he really got the daylight beat out of him when he got home. What a sad experience.
Yeah, it was insult to injury. It was just got worse, which is a shame.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and luckily that didn't happen, except for the blue-green mist people, which we are guessing had nothing really to do with extraterrestrials. But most of the people that you write about that did have direct contact had fairly nice experiences. Even the children that saw the three little guys jumping down from the window.
Yeah.
That was a cute
little
story.
Yes.
Yeah. Now they were scared at the time, but you know, in the end, even for my own abduction, you know, in the end, I had worse experiences with my foot doctor down here in Newcastle, Delaware, than I did with the alien guys.
Well, gee, you just answered Travis's question. He just answered it. We don't even need to ask now.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take the thunder away on that. You know, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Hey, now, also, Gerard, do you have a favorite story? I mean, you've talked to so many people, but for your Mid-Atlantic UFO book, was there a favorite story of yours in this book that you'd like to tell our audience about?
No, I don't really think of it that way. I guess favorite story. Well, you know, I really like the blue-green mist story, I have to tell you. It's not that I like the outcome, but I like the fact that it is so completely off the wall, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I also like the other story that's in Maryland. That was in Maryland. There was only two stories in Maryland. They were both fairly long, so that's why there was only two, about the woman who had invisible aliens visiting her on a day of horrific trauma in her life. And how they were trying to infuse her with strength and courage, it seems. Mm-hmm. At least that's her take on it.
That was very interesting because it was the day that her grandmother died, and she was, I guess, as you mentioned in the book, she was led to behave a little bit differently. She got herself all dressed up and had makeup on, which she normally didn't, and had somebody else, I guess, take her child. Where was her child going? I forget if it was camp.
Yeah, going to like summer camp or summer school.
Yeah, something like that. So she found herself doing things she wouldn't normally do. And, yeah, that was a fascinating story. But she attributed that to alien intervention.
Yeah, and not until many years later when she started studying hypnotism that during some of the practice sessions with another student, the student took her fellow student, you know, regressed her back to this particular day at her request just to see, you know, why did I act so odd that day? You know, why did I do that? And it, that's what she discovered, that in the regression, that there were actually aliens in the house with her, but they were invisible. They were invisible. They were out of the white light range and in trying to help her in some way. And why would that be? Why would they pick on that, on this particular woman? That, well, the day was very traumatic because her mother, her grandmother didn't just die. She had been murdered in her home.
Horrible.
And, it, you know, it was a nightmare for her family to deal with this. And then the aftermath of the, you know, police investigations and trials. And, oh, my God, I just can't imagine it, really. But, and then this whole incident propelled her towards a study of spiritualism and the wider view of things. And so it became like a circle, you know, around in this circle.
And it also,
so it was,
like,
it was really an unusual story.
It's a very unusual story, and it makes me wonder if they're more around than we even know. What do you think, Becky? Do you think that they're kind of hanging out and we just don't see them?
Absolutely. I think like 98% of them have the ability to be invisible. And I also feel like, to me, some of the what people would call aliens are actually angels. And then some I would call lower type forms would be ETs. So, you know, to me, they could have been angels there with her. You know, and it would still be in a form of alien, but it would be angels. That's what I feel. Like the elders that I've been involved with, they're angels to me. Even though they're ETs and they were on the ships and that, they still feel angelic to me. And I would call them angels over a gray or over the others that I have seen that have are shorter than they are and have the blue or green eyes with blondish, golden blondish color hair. Those would be a different form of beings. And I would call them ETs over the elders, the ones that are very tall and white with white hair and crystally color eyes. See, so to me, when I read that, I was feeling she had actual angels there helping her.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that
I hear more
sense.
And more people talking about a connection between aliens and the spirit realm. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, not, like I
it's
said,
open.
Nothing surprises me in the end.
Yeah. Well, we're all connected. We are all connected, so you're right.
Absolutely.
I mean, yes. With the energy and in even these worlds that are, the realms that are open, I mean, don't they say, you know, the vibration of your energy and your light as it rises, you know, you're more able to walk in those realms. So
sure.
I think, you know, we all have it in us. We're light beings, so we're automatically connected. It's just, I guess, how you actually live and feel. And I think the heart, again, has a lot to do with it. That's why I was really surprised when you were saying about the greenish-blue mist and people, you know, suicide. And it, I mean, that comes right down to the heart. It comes down to the emotion to give up or not to give up. You know, so I don't know that it's all connected. It has great meaning, and it can be really at one scale up to this top end, and then it can fall to the bottom of the scale. So it's I guess how people handle it, how they walk in life and deal with it.
Yeah,
you know,
we
you
all
know
have
what?
Choice,
I,
right?
Mm-hmm.
We have choice, but then it also makes me wonder, because if you have beings that are influencing us from invisible spectrums, excuse me, then it just there can be good, but there can be also the other side of it, as we have discussed
right.
at length
right.
with Michael Bastien, who's the Algonquin
right.
elder, that there's the good and the bad. So. We can be influenced either way, and it does boil down to what's our choice going to be. So, it's again, there's a lot out there that we don't see or we don't choose to see, but then aren't we then at the effect of it? I'd love
That's
to
right.
just be able to see them all and then, okay, I'll listen to you, but I'm not going to listen to you over there.
That's right.
You know, you brought up a really good point, and I'm still in contact with the lady who, on a regular basis, the lady who told me that story, her story. And one of the things I'm going to have to ask her now, based on what you just said, is the day, thinking back on it now, the day that your grandmother died and you were being influenced, now you know who, more or less, you have an idea who was influencing you. Would you have been able to ignore the influence? I have to ask her that question.
Yeah,
I want to know.
Question, Gerard. Yeah.
I want to know if she could have turned it off and just, you know, stayed in her pajamas and stayed in bed today instead of getting up, getting dressed, getting ready. That was a really good point. I'm going to ask her that question.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think anybody could, though? I mean,
I don't know.
You mean it was such a pull that she automatically did it, you're saying?
Well, that's the impression I got from her. She felt, I remember she said she felt like she needed to do these things. And, and if you think about it, I mean, she did.
Mm-hmm.
She was all ready to go when the bad news hit the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so was that a good thing? Actually, I think it was a good thing. But you know, you guys were just talking about it. How much of that influence can we freely choose or dispel?
Right.
You
yeah,
know?
I think it's a great question to ask her since she had the direct experience, because sometimes I wonder if we're just all here to entertain beings that are influencing us one way or the other. Are we just their television?
I've always liked to think that we have both free will, and yet there is a prepackaged plan set in place before we even get here. But you can turn that off. You can, and I've done this. I've popped it away and said, I'm not following that plan. I'm going to do what I want to do on this one. You know, I've done that.
I think there is,
Yeah, you can do that. So when people, and you know, this is another whole philosophical question, but you know, there's been this lifelong or ages long debate: is it free will or is it predetermination? You know, well, I found it's both. You can use whichever you choose. Are you with me on that one? I don't know, but
I think you've got it. It is both, absolutely. It's just, it is an interesting question about how much influence there is out there, where it's coming from, who these beings are. I don't know if you're a Doctor Who fan at all, but there was a wonderfully written Doctor Who about these alien beings who are influencing people, and there was only one person who could see them for only a second, and then she would forget. And it just, but these beings were there, and they were influencing everybody, and not in a good way. It was a fascinating show, and it made me, you made me think of it when you talked about the story about the lady and her grandmother. I was like, wow, you know, here it was written about and played out beautifully in a Doctor Who, as part of the Doctor Who series. But it really does make you think, are those beings there? Are they influencing us in ways that, because we don't see in those spectrums of light that we don't know that they're there when they are.
Right.
Well, I just hope my stepson and his wife are listening, because they are Doctor Who fanatics.
All right.
They would love the fact that you had just brought up Doctor Who into this conversation, I'll tell you right now. So, all right, that's that.
It's a brilliant series, it's a great series, so I'm glad to hear that you have relatives that recognize the value of it.
Oh, my God. They just went to some, it's the 50th anniversary this year, right?
That's right.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
They just had the anniversary, and the two of them went to some big affair somewhere that was a big Doctor Who affair. I don't know what it was, but... But you know, something that I'd like to share that helps support again what we were just talking about, what you were just talking about, really. I've been doing it for a couple of months now. I've been trying to contact the aliens myself, along with some friends of mine or some acquaintances, and we've been putting the message out, asking them to come to a certain place at a certain time on a certain day, and either meet with us in person or send some equipment flying by so we know they got our meditative message that we put out 10 days for the 10 days previous to the appointment. Now, we did not create this, by the way. We did not invent this. People up in Rochester, New York have been doing it for a few years, and I think Whitley Strieber's been doing it. So, you know, it's nothing new, really. But just this last time, which was... 2 weeks ago. Let me see. Did I write it? I have it written down here. Yeah, November 22nd. It was a Friday night. Went to At Glen, Pennsylvania, a little village up in southeastern Pennsylvania. And we put the message out and blah, blah, blah. And just to cut through the mustard here for you, because it could be a long story, I don't want it to be. We saw things. You know, there were lights flashing in these woods that shouldn't have been there, and I took some pictures. And Becky, I think I sent you the pictures, didn't I? Didn't I send you pictures? Okay, so I sent some pictures.
Yes, maybe you sent some really great pictures that you caught. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, those the pictures from November 22nd. And when I took the pictures, I didn't see any of those things in the picture with my naked eye. But they showed up when the analyst up in New York looked at them and blew them up and played with them and all that. But here's my point. Here's what I wanted to bring up. There were four of us out there that night. One of them was the lady who told me the story about her grandmother in Baltimore.
Oh.
This particular night, she had, before she got to our meeting, as it were, and we didn't know this till the end of the night. She didn't see anything all night long. She didn't see any flashing lights. She didn't see anything at all. Nothing happened. But at the end of the night, she told us that, well, maybe it's because I put up this protective anti-alien energy around me because she had been having some alien problems earlier in the week.
And
right?
That can be done.
So now,
oh,
I don't know what
hilarious.
I'm not at liberty to say what problems she was having earlier in the week. She probably wouldn't want me to get into that. But three of us were standing there, and we saw lights in these trees and woods and all. She couldn't see anything. So,
so funny.
So again, you know, we were talking about how much can they influence at any given time. Well, are they able to so influence things that they could put something right in front of three people, and yet the fourth person is blocked out of it? I'm thinking yes, because that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
Absolutely.
And she was a little, she was a little PO'd by the end of the night, because we've been standing out in this plowed field for like an hour and a half, you know, looking at stuff, and three of us are going, oh, well, look, did you see that? Oh, yeah, look at that. Hey, there's one over there. Yeah, I saw that one. But she's there like, I don't see nothing. I don't see it. I don't see it. I can't see anything. But then at the end of the night, she said, well, maybe because I did that. And I'm thinking, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't go with that negative energy if you're going to come. If you're asking for somebody to come and visit, you know.
That's
well, she put a blinder on. I mean, she went and did that and safeguarded herself because she felt that's what she needed. And that's like, you know, putting a cap over your head. That's it. I'm not going to see it, even if it's there.
You know what? That makes good sense. Why didn't I think of that? It can go either way. It can be them blocking her out, or her keeping them blocked out.
Right.
And her intention was to block them out. Why wouldn't that be it?
Exactly.
Of course,
exactly.
That would be it.
Exactly.
Thanks for getting my head put on straight, ladies. I appreciate that.
And we have a free will to do so.
Yes, we do. And I'm intrigued also, Gerard, by what you're doing. I think it's a great thing where you're actually making contact, because I think it's a logical next step. I mean, there's only so much looking at lights in the sky you can do, and then you come to a point, or at least I do, where I go, okay, now what? I see you in the sky, a wave, hello. Now it's time to, let's have a connection here. Let's have a conversation. Yeah. And so I'm intrigued by what you're doing. I think it's great.
Well, we've
you're
done it three times up in At Glen now, and, mm-hmm. and we picked there initially because it is a hot spot anyway. I think there's a story or so in the Mid-Atlantic book, but there are certainly a number of stories in the UFOs Above Pennsylvania book, because At Glen's in southeastern PA, excuse me. I agree 500% with you. What, you know, it's great to see stuff flying around. It's all good. It's all wonderful. But, so you know, now what? What's next? That's exactly right. The other thing that motivates me with this is that I am sick and tired of waiting for my government and my military to come clean and say, okay, you know, we admit it, finally the aliens are here, and, you know, we're all going to celebrate on July 4th and have a big UFO party or something like that. You know, I'm tired of waiting for them. I'm taking them out of the equation. They're out. Now, if this continues to work, And the people in Rochester, New York, by the way, did it for 4 years in a row, three times a year. They were good 11 out of 12 times. That's not chance.
No,
that's,
yeah, that's good. That's excellent.
That's solid results, you know. Me and my little couple of buddies are 3 for 3 in At Glen. That's way beyond chance, you know.
Yeah,
so
it's fun
let's stop waiting for everybody else and stop, you know, stop. Forget about the Freedom of Information Act. Not going to help you enough. Even all the pictures you take in the world, somebody, even ufologists will say, you know, you could have done that on a graphic arts program on your computer, and that's probably true. You know, we have an entire industry worldwide that does nothing but fake stuff every day. It's called entertainment.
Right.
That's what they do. They fake stuff every day. So, yeah, we can fake stuff. We're real good at it. We can fake stuff. So don't worry about whether you take pictures or photos or videos or anything. Just go out, put the information out, have them, you know, stop by your house, put on the coffee, and let's talk a little bit. Let's share some information, you know. Help me with some answers. I'm going to keep going for it, and I'll send the I have your email address.
Yes.
I expect to have yours. I'm doing this next Saturday night again here in town. Now, it's not a hot spot in my little town of Delaware City, Delaware. It's not a hot spot, I'll tell you right now. However, I have seen some things here, and other people have too. So a buddy and I are going to do this invitation. I call it Alien Invitation next Saturday night. Outside his house, right down by the canal, you know, he's going to put on a fire and some hot dogs and things, you know.
That's
great. I don't know about the hot dogs. I told him to hold off on the hot dogs. That's just not, you know, we need to be serious. We need to get serious with this. And I'm going to see, well, could it happen anywhere then? You know, hot spots, it seems to work, 3 for 3. But how about our little town that's not a hot spot? We'll see. And I'll send you a report. I'll send you a report even if it's zero, even if it's no.
Yeah.
Just so you know that. You know, maybe you have to go to a hot spot to really get their attention or something. I don't know. But I'm going to keep pressing on with it. So.
Well, and what do you actually do? I mean, tell our audience what's your experience when you go there.
Oh, the experiences. I'm sorry.
How do you do it? I mean, maybe people would like to set up their own groups and try this for themselves. So.
Well, I just copied what the people in Rochester were doing. I keep giving them credit because they deserve it. And their story's in the book, by the way, under New York. It's called The Nine. You know, they're the people who are really plowing ahead with this. Anyway, I put out my affirmation. I'll recite my affirmation for you. It's very short. I don't know what the other people are saying. I didn't want to influence what they were doing. I want everybody to say what they want to say, you know. But here's what I say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from the heart, exactly. From the heart, let them say it their way. But here's what I say. To all the aliens who visit Earth on a regular basis and are friendly to humanity, would one of you please meet with me and my friends in At Glen, Pennsylvania, on, what's the night? Saturday night, December 7th, between 8 and 9 p.m., and then I send a little image of that place up into the heavens. And I said, if you're not willing to meet with us or cannot, would you at least please send some of your ships flying by so that we know for certain that you got the message? I say that three times a day, and I say them all in succession. And I try to get in into a little meditative state when I do that. It takes me about 2 minutes to say it, no big deal. And I do it for 10 days, including the day of the invitation. And then I show up on time to meet or see something, and we've seen something every time. The first time was, oh my God.
It was a Kim moment.
Yeah, it must have been a Kim moment.
we get up on it's essentially private property. We've been had permission to come up there, and there's these plowed fields out in the back of the property that run for maybe 800 feet, something like that. And then there's some woods that run along a slight incline, a hill, and they run for a couple of miles. They run east and west, and we're looking kind of due south from this parking area. But out to the south, east that the first night, which was September 14th, by the way, this past September 14th, cloudless night in Atglen, Pennsylvania, and that's spelled A-T-G-L-E-N, Atglen, Pennsylvania. Cloudless night, zero wind. Check the weather reports. It was just perfect. It was just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So we were standing up near a silo near one of the barns, and we were just looking around. We asked them to show up between 9 and 11. 9:08, this orange sphere appears up in the sky and is moving towards our area from the east. And then there's three behind that at a little bit of a distance behind it, and they're coming this way. And then there's six more in a pattern, right? So and they're coming out from behind what is, it turns out that it's like they're behind a tree. There's a tree on the property next to where we're standing, a couple of big trees, and they were blocking out exactly where they were coming from. So all we had to do was walk down into the to the field about 20 yards, not very far, to get away from the tree so we could see, you know, where they're coming from. And, oh, my God, there was this huge ball of, or a cluster, excuse me. It was shaped like a ball, but it was a cluster of all these orange globes together. And it was breaking up, and it had to be, and I mean this, it had to be a half mile in diameter. It was huge.
Wow.
It was huge. And they were breaking up, and they were all coming towards our direction in these little groups and patterns. I counted 19 in the end. I counted 19. And as they were got to, they may have traveled up about maybe a half a mile, maybe a mile. And they were moving at a fairly good clip, faster than a little prop engine plane that we watched that was flying towards them, but it was further south, so it wasn't a collision course or anything. But it was in the air at the same time, so it was a real neat comparison, you know. Well, they got to this one particular point. They made a sharp left-hand turn, their left, and they vanished into beautiful, dark night sky without clouds, no clouds, and they just disappear. And then they each did this in their turn. They like took a turn. They took their turns. These little groupings, and the three of us that were there, you know. Now I admit I'm happy to admit that I had a camera in my pocket. Do you think I would get the camera out and take pictures? Do you think I would could have got past my little technophobia stuff and just, you know, it's an insta, almost like an Instamatic, you know, just point and click. But I could, it never even dawned on me. It just never even.
How
it was
funny.
Part of the night. You know, it was all about, oh, my God, wow, and wow again.
Yes.
We were ecstatic. We were ecstatic.
Do you get any communication from them?
I did not. The lady who was there, who was from the neighborhood, from Atglen, who is also an amateur astronomer, did not. However, the other lady said to us very shortly after they were gone, she said, do you feel like something else happened? And I said, no, I really didn't. I didn't feel like anything else happened. And she said it several times through the night. Oh, and then I should tell you this. Now, And it was after this that she started saying that. I beg your pardon. About a half hour after we saw these things, and we only saw them for about, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, something like that. That was no more than that, certainly. Well, we were still standing around. We had an hour and a half to go, and we thought, well, do we really need to hang around? Because we saw, you know, we asked, they came. It's a home run, you know. Well, we were congratulating ourselves on how wonderful we were when all of a sudden, and it seemed almost directly across from us, behind the trees up over the hill, which is about 1,500 feet from where we were standing. And this all happened in an instant. A large number of dogs started barking all at once.
Like
they were turned on with a switch, you know, and they were barking like lunatics. This lasted for about, I think we estimated about 30, it seemed like long seconds, because they were raising hell, and the woman who lives in the neighborhood was saying, well, you know, I don't believe there's any kennels up there. I don't know what, you know, there is another farm on the other side of that hill, and but the house isn't near, it is in directly south from where we were. The house was much further to the east on the other side. So, you know, she didn't know what it was, and she said she'd check it out and all. But we're listening to these dogs, and we all commented on how odd it was that, first of all, there must be so many dogs over there, and how did they get to start barking all at one time exactly, you know?
Wow.
And then about 30 seconds later, they all stopped on a dime. And we were looking at each other saying, you know, what the hell is that all about? You know, what was
right.
that?
Right. They were communicating.
Not right. Something's not right. Well, the one lady who then started to say things like, you know, did you guys think something else happened, or do you feel like we missed any time or anything? And I said, no, I've been checking my phone, and at the time seems, you know, right on. I don't believe we lost any time at all. She said, well, you know, the next time you come up, I'd like to hypnotize you, if you don't mind, and see if anything, you know, comes up. I said, okay, you know, I'm good with that. Been there before. Happy to do it again. So about 2 or 3 weeks later, I finally got back up there in her area, and I saw her, she said, here, this was at her workplace, actually, and she said, look, we can go into this little room here, and we can do this real quick, and you're real easy to hypnotize, I happen to know. And I said, you're right, I could drop dead if I wanted to, and just by thinking about it. So
wow.
I said, so let's do it, and went under very easily, and sure enough, when we got to the part about the dogs, in the regression, the dogs barked for about 1 second, stopped, and then suddenly in front of us, or in front of my vision here in the regression, out on the field, which would have been directly in front of where we were standing that night, due south, was this huge ship. It was on the ground. It was there for 1 second in my regression, and then it was gone.
Hmm.
And then right after that, these two faces came floating by me in the regression. They were like alien grays, although their heads seemed bigger, actually. They seemed bigger than a gray, and their heads were a little more elongated. And one head came from, like, the upper right-hand corner and floated in front of me down to the south, lower left. And then another one came from the upper left and floated down to the lower right. And then that was gone. That was the end of that.
So you were able to retrieve some other memories of that night.
That was all that came up at that in that regression, which was fairly short. And again, we were at the lady's work; we couldn't be doing this all day, you know. But I did not. I didn't see anything like that night, and I don't know. I really don't know what that was all about. In the end, she said, though, she goes, yeah. Because now she had already, I didn't say this, she had already self-regressed herself over this evening and had seen something. She saw the ship.
Okay.
I said, you're kidding me.
Oh, my goodness.
You're kidding me. And she said, no, I saw that. So I described it as best I could, and she goes, yeah, that's about right. Well, I mean, I don't know what to make of that. It was I only saw it for a second, then these faces came floating by, and I don't know what that all means. But that's what happened. Now, she's supposed to have regressed the other lady, the third person who was there, but that has never happened for whatever reason. You know, I've just never been able to hook up and get it done, and because I'd really love to hear if she says something similar. And we have not told her our stories, you know, our little pieces. So
right,
if
so
that
she
ever
would
happens,
just have
I'll, you know, I'll email you about that and let you know.
But, you know, let me go back, if I could, for a minute, Gerard, to the kind of the invocation that you give. I really like it. It's so respectful and it's so inviting to call these beings in. And it's not dissimilar to how I instruct people on how to get their dream relationship going so they can remember their dreams better, work with their dreams better, construct their light body. It's the same energy. It's just it's building a bridge there. And I really like what you're doing, you know, with building a bridge, because, again, I probably wouldn't be as respectful as you. I'd probably say, look, I'm tired of the lights in the sky. You want to talk to me? Come on over. We'll talk. We'll, you know, but don't bug me, you know, about with the lights. I could care less, you know. So I wouldn't be like you when it comes to this. I think it's wonderful that you are so open-hearted about this.
Oh,
and so enthusiastic and so passionate. And it's a pleasure listening to you talk about your experiences and your interviews with all these wonderful people that have come forward to talk to you. Really, it's delightful.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I've been having a lot of fun for the last couple of years, no question about it. And you know what? It's because, to me and to many other people, but certainly to me, this is the most important story of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing compares to it, you know. So, you know,
What's your end game with this, though? What is your final goal or your goal with this? When you go out every 10 days or so or however often you do this and you attempt to meet with them in a certain way, what would be your ideal situation and what could possibly happen for you?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Yes. We're ready.
My end game at this point is, I want to ride in a flying saucer.
Oh.
They're fun. I'll let you know. They're fun.
That's the starting point, you know. Ever since I was a kid, I thought, oh, my God, I'd just love to be taken up one of these flying saucers and get me off this stupid planet. You know, we're doing so many stupid things here. Get me out of here at least for a couple of hours, you know. Let me get away from it all. I mean really away from it all and see something really – really different. Now that's only half a joke. It's only half a joke because I really would love to do that. But for the long term, for the really, really serious answer, I'd like to know, you know, did they put us here? I want to know some of the answers, some of the background first, just for a start, and then where can we all go from here? What problems can you help us with and start solving things right now? I have a grandson who has autism, for instance. I'd love to be able to bring him around. And could they fix that?
Mm-hmm.
He's 10 years old and he can't talk. Could they fix it? Because nobody else here can fix it. You know? Can they do that? I don't know, and I don't know. And if they said no, I would respect that because, you know, maybe it's up to us to figure out to solve our own problems. I mean, most parents... I think a better parent would say to their child, I'm not giving you the answer. You figure it out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we learn, right? So would they do that? Would that? Okay. But sometimes, wouldn't it be nice just to have a little treat once in a while, like if they could fix my grandson and make him whole? That would be a question I'd have. Beyond that, ladies, I don't know. I guess I'd have to wing it and play it by ear. I'd be so overwhelmed in the beginning, you know, by being in contact. That, you know, I don't know if I'd be able to think of anything other than, can I take your picture? You know?
People
have been telling me for years, I need to do this. So just smile or something, you know.
That's right. Stay still.
Yeah, hold still for me.
Believe me, they don't like staying
still. Smile by the spaceship.
And what about the moon? This dark side of the moon.
I'm sorry. What was that?
What about the dark side of the moon that we hear that they're all over there on the dark side of the moon still?
Well, you know what? If I get that ride in the spaceship, I can always say, "Hey, listen,
while
we're
know.
Headed out, can we scoot around the back of the moon there? Just give me a quick look." You know, I was reading Jim Mars' book the other day, The Alien Agenda, and one thing that I had never heard about before, and I guess I'm kind of ashamed to admit this. But I had never heard the theory before that the moon has only been up there for maybe about 6,000-7,000 years. That's one of the theories in his book.
Somebody's
put forth, and I don't know who did it. I don't have the book. It was a library. I borrowed it, so I can't look it up for you real quick. But yeah, we talked about somebody. Conjecturing that the moon has only been up there some 6,000 years or so. And isn't it kind of odd that on an eclipse, our moon just happens to exactly fit in front of our sun, whereas nobody else, no other planet in the solar system can do that with their moon. You know, and of course, and I guess this was all part of a chapter he had on, you know, how the moon was hollow, and astronauts have said that, you know, that, you know, you throw things here or there and there's a ringing going on in the moon and that shouldn't be there and all that. So could it be a artificial satellite that somebody actually hollowed out or constructed and stuck there. Well, you know, these guys are really clever. They can do things that you and I can only dream about. And even, I don't know that we could even do that sometimes. I don't know if we could get to the to dream about what they can do.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I guess it, so to have a base on the dark side, I think would be a snap for them. That would be a that'd be like almost a no-brainer.
You know? Yeah, an easy accomplishment.
Yeah.
And let me just, again, revisit what you were talking about, again, hoping for some type of assistance from them. And I think back to, of course, Star Trek, you know, the Prime Directive, that they weren't allowed to interfere, you know, with civilizations. But certainly the temptation was there to reach out and try to help people on certain planets that were developing. And, you know, I really hear you when you say, wouldn't it be great if they could give you the cure for your grandson and he could speak and he could be what we would call normal, but at least communicate. It would be so wonderful. And certainly we sit back and say, gee, if these advanced aliens are around and they're watching everything we're doing, then, you know, why don't they help us more often? It's a valid question.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, on Star, I used to be a big Star Trek fan. I won't tell you how big, or maybe I can tell you. Well, my oldest son I named Landru after one of the characters in the second season that appeared.
Did you really?
Yeah, the episode called Return of the Archons. I can even tell
you. That's a big fan.
That's
yeah, he hasn't talked to me since. You know?
No.
No, that's not true. That's not true. That's not
no,
true.
I didn't think that you were capable of that. So.
Yeah, yeah. So he might be a little irritated about that, but in the end, I think it's all good. But you know, in that series, they often interfered with the planets they visited.
Yes, they did, with consequences.
In hopes of making things better or putting things back the way they were before somebody else did something. But often they stuck their nose in their business. You know?
Right.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
They still refer to that Prime Directive. They weren't supposed to, but they did it anyways. So, you know, again, it makes me wonder, too, about all of this. I mean, you hear stories of how certain races of aliens have made basically pacts with the government, that they won't divulge things to the rest of us only through the government. And
right,
I hope they realize the error of their ways. I
hope so.
It's just exciting to hear what
you're doing.
Well,
that would just prove that they're not that smart.
Yeah, really. They expected much more.
At least those ones are not.
Yeah, at least that negotiator, whoever that negotiator was,
really,
he screwed that up.
We need better negotiators.
Absolutely.
Well, and we need people, and we need races from other planets who are, as you mentioned, you know, in that would work in the best interest of all of us, not just, you know, humans, but in other species, too, that we could work together, and it wouldn't have to go through the hierarchy, but they could come right to you. For example, when you reach out to them.
Well, I was just thinking they should come right to you two because you two are right on top of it.
Right.
Plus, you have your own radio show. You can put them on the radio.
We are supernatural girls. Yes, we are.
That's right.
I mean, you
we
can't
are,
beat that.
We are.
I don't have a radio show. You
High
guys
five.
Are on top of
it. We'll interview them.
That's
yeah,
right.
We will.
That's right.
I'd be happy
Absolutely.
To. I think we almost did in the first part of the show with all that echoing going on.
Yes, that echoing. I'm telling you, they have the lines wide open listening to us.
Yeah, maybe they want to talk.
They're going to just pop on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we welcome you.
Yeah. That's right. We'll pen them in. We'll make sure they get their say.
That's right. No problem there. But Gerard,
I have another question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Becky. I'm sorry.
Okay, about spheres. I noticed throughout the years, you know, first there were a lot of sightings of ships and then different types of ships. And it seems like in the last, what, maybe 5 years or so, spheres and, you know, they've been seen everywhere. Red, green, white, blue, you know, all these spheres or huge basketball-shaped orbs or, you know, like you say, you don't want to call them orbs, but an orb is an orb. It's round, filled thing floating through the air. Yeah. So it seems like those are showing up in multitudes, you know, in all different sizes, all different colors, doing all different things within the last 5 years.
Okay.
Do you notice that?
Well, you know, I haven't been one to actually follow the any kind of pattern on what type of ships are showing up when. I have not really focused on that much, but you certainly have. So, I mean, I yield to your observations on that, Becky. Certainly, the objects that I have seen most is the globes or the orbs. I've seen much more of them than anything else. Is that part of their latest technology? Are they replacing some of the bigger ships? I don't know. I'd love to, I would love to have seen one of those triangular, gigantic triangular things, ships. But I've never seen that, so I can't talk to that too much. I have seen saucers. Even the first one was in the year 2000, June 7th, in Roswell, New Mexico. I saw one then just last year. October 16th of 2012 in French Creek State Park with a buddy of mine who, before that night, was a hardcore skeptic. He is a skeptic no more. So,
I like
you know, I've seen a few ships. They're still around, obviously, the saucer-type ships. But I wonder, does that come with the advancement in their technology? You know, as we improve our stuff, we change things, how they look and what they do, and all. Maybe they do the same thing. Maybe the orbs are the ultra compact, simple nanotechnology of the aliens to get things studied or observed. I don't know.
Well, they truly are everywhere. And all different shapes and sizes and colors. And I'd like to one day have lots of reports of them and put it all together and try to figure out exactly what is going on at the point in time when the people are seeing them and the colors and the shapes and, you know, all of this information, because I think we can figure something out with these. They're more tangible and they're more, you know, they're a lot closer to people.
Yeah, yeah. I've thought a couple
tip.
Of times.
Yeah.
Now I've never tried this, but I've thought if I had enough backup and I had enough courage, that the next time I got close to one of these globes or orbs, I would take my jacket and throw it over it and try to grab it and take it home or something, or take it down.
They move around.
You know,
I've
take it to the,
doesn't work.
To the Patty and Becky radio show, you know, of Supergirls, and, you know,
it
try to get
work.
It.
Doesn't work. They won't let you grab them.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, that's what I've never had that courage to do that, and I'm not sure I should, but, you know, maybe one of these days I'll just go for it and see what happens.
Yeah. I don't think they'll let you grab them. I've had the courage to going after them. But they run away or they move around you and make a toy out of you like they're playing a game, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I can capture them with pictures. I've learned
to
do that.
The best orb pictures I've ever seen. They love
well, you
her.
Know, you
they
can
just,
always send
I believe
me an email
they show up
with
just
one
for
of those
her.
Attached. I'd love to see that, you know?
Yes. I've got to send you my one that looks, I mean, I swear, it's a full-blown angel, and
it just shrunk
it right down to a little orb and then started opening up right in front of me. And I was so amazed. It's the most beautiful thing, I'm telling you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Beautiful,
Well, it's all out there, you know. It's all out there.
It is.
So
it is. Wonderful world.
It's getting involved and starting to look at it and staying open-minded about it.
That's
I think
right.
That's, I
and
think
positive.
Be a fair start.
That's the
key. Fair start for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you much, Gerard, for this wonderful evening with you. This has been just so much fun. Thank you.
Yes.
And again, for everybody listening, Gerard's book is called Mid-Atlantic UFOs, High Traffic Area. It is available on Amazon.com.
Ladies, thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank
okay?
you.
Oh, thank
Good
you,
night.
Gerard. And keep us posted on all your adventures, please.
We'll
yes.
do.
Yes.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gerard. So, Becky, you've got a message
Bye-bye.
To deliver.
Bye-bye. Yes, I do. I have a message for someone tonight, and it was really, this one was actually kind of strange because I got just one sentence of it earlier in the day, And I'm thinking, you know, I went back and I sat down quietly and I'm thinking, is that it? And then the other half of the sentence came. And it was like all day this took. It was very strange. And
even
the person's name is quite different, which I thought was really special. So tonight we have a message for Trey. Here is your message, Trey. Hear us. Focus once again on thy research. Continue. Yoshondi ki mianta sararatata kuhoriata she. Nayati ti miandaru turukusu. O loreata tashan nomoka laresa eteti moshondurukushate a indirikisiata. No diaritisi iata Trey. We are with you. And there you go, Trey. I'm telling you, they really want you to continue your research. This was a very strange message for me to receive, two parts, once in the morning and then later in the evening. It was pretty amazing. So there you go, Trey.
That's great, Becky. Well, thank you.
Yes.
And Trey, feel free to send us an email when you receive this message and let Becky know that you got it.
Yes, that would be wonderful. I love hearing back from everyone in their messages.
Yes, and you can find contact information for Becky on the Supernatural Girls with a Z website. And Becky and I both offer different types of readings and services for people. And our Christmas gift and holiday gift to everybody is 10% off of our regular price for the month of December. And please sign up and subscribe to Supernatural Girls newsletter so that you can be entered into the drawings for books and giveaways. We have an incredible giveaway coming up, a half an hour free reading with Patricia Kirkman. So be sure you're signed up or you won't be able to get into the good stuff here. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, Patricia will be with us in 2 weeks, and next week we have superstar UFO abductee Travis Walton, thanks to you, Becky. So,
wait
to interview Travis.
So
it's going to be fun.
Yes, I know. I'm excited, too. I love our shows. I love them. They're wonderful, and I love everybody out there, and I want to say good night, Patricia, and good night to everyone out there.
Good night, Becky. Good night, everybody. Be sure to tune in next week, and we will be talking to you soon.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another radio adventure with Supernatural.